Okay. Can you hear me now?
I can. Okay. Let's just go right from the top then.
Okay. Let's do it.
All right. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the Flex Fox Fantasy Baseball Podcast, the weekly show. I am your host, Garth Newton, coming to you live from my attic here in beautiful New Hamburg, Ontario. And with me, as always, is my favorite co-host, Jeremiah Johnson. How's it going?
It's good. I mean, I'm wondering when I will be invited to the attic studio in New Hamburg.
Ooh. You know what? It's 250 square feet of luxurious space. You've all seen the backdrop with the canvas ceiling and walls, but it's got space. And there's no fewer than three full desks set up here, one of which is my eldest daughter's desk, which is about to be converted into a podcasting desk itself.
So what you're telling me is that you banish your kids to your attic to do work.
It's more that I keep my kids out of the attic because I have to work, but they like to be up here. And my eldest is turning into a little mini gamer. She really likes her her Minecraft playing.
I was just going to ask if she's into like Minecraft or Roblox or something like that. Yeah,
big into Minecraft, and she has a somewhat annoying habit of narrating her playing, even if she's the only one in the room. So, you know, podcasting future for sure.
Yeah, or streamer maybe.
Ooh, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, streamers love to narrate their lives.
It's true. And she does watch a lot of them on YouTube Kids. But enough about me, Jeremiah. Shall we go ahead and dive into this week's scoreboard, as it were?
I would love to.
Perfect. Then let's go ahead and start where we typically start, right at the top, with the highest scoring team, which this past week was the fourth quarter Jimmy Butler's, as Tillo put up a massive 298.5 this past week, and in doing so, just slaughtered Ash's Moneyballers at 153.1. What stood out to you in this particular matchup?
So I think what's really interesting is how he actually went about doing it. So kind of like, he's kind of like real life Jimmy Butler, right? Like just amazing individual. But Adolis Garcia was the Jimmy Butler of this week for Jimmy Butlers. 49.9 points, basically a 50 piece. But I think what also is really interesting is Drew Smiley had a great game, which, you know, Drew Smiley is kind of a retread, a guy who's picked up for probably free. But that's a nice 28 points that he got out of him. And then Joey Lucchesi, would you think he's the third highest scorer on the team? Probably not. Chris Sale had a really not great week. So it just goes to show you, like, baseball's weird. Baseball's really weird. And when you think about Ash's team, conversely, if I asked you to name his top two scorers, I don't know if you've looked. You probably have. If you have looked, say so. But if you haven't looked, who were they?
Yeah, so I definitely have looked. And you're absolutely right. I would not have guessed either of them.
Right. So for people at home, that is Gabriel Moreno. Shout out Ross Atkins. And Marco Gonzalez. So people you would not think as leading scorers on a team. So I just kind of chalk it up to one of those weeks where it's like, this was kind of like the best outcome for Tillo combined with a bad outcome for Ash. How do you see it?
Yeah, much the same way. Adolis Garcia is, to me as well, just a bit of a surprise. As recent as 2 years ago, he would have been a free agent pickup just right on the waiver wire. But now he's a top bat in our league. Definitely worthy of a keeper. Whereas for Ash, I mean, Devers put up some numbers, but I wonder if this is what we're going to see from Rafael Devers all year, which is to say, there's a reason that Boston sucks. And he's playing for that team. There's only so much you can do if you are the one guy in the lineup to be afraid.
Well, I mean, normally I'd agree with you. So, like, Pittsburgh was a great example of this for years and years and years, right? So you get Brian Reynolds, and, like, he was okay. He was, like, low twos, 2 points per game, because he had nobody around him. But I find it interesting. Like, Brian Reynolds is having a much better season. Granted, there's a bit more talent around him, but not, like, way more. Because O'Neill Cruz is basically not there at all. So it's kind of the same. Yeah, like it's kind of the same lineup. So when you're a guy like Devers, I think like he would be a top 15 player, I think, consensus in our league if it was starting up today. And I think with those kind of players, you're expecting them to be good irrespective of what's around them. So I think that's disappointing, I guess, is what I'm trying to say here. He's been disappointing.
Yeah, could be. And with this loss, we see Ash slide down to an 0-3 while Jimmy Butler keeps his own streak alive at 3-0. So two teams going in two very, very different directions.
Jimmy Butler's just always solid. Like, I don't know how you feel about Richard, but he's just always solid. Like, he's always, back when there was divisions, he was always like first or second. I think he's always generally a top four-ish team. Usually wins a round or two in the playoffs. Like, he's just consistently awesome. So,
yeah, but unlike the real Jimmy Butler, he does tend to fall off once he hits that second round of the playoffs. That's usually when Jimmy Butler comes alive, right?
Yeah, neither of them sniff a final usually. I mean, I guess Butler did make it the 1 year, but outside of that, I don't think he sniffed a final. So
flags fly forever. And I believe actually that's one of the things that Ryan Neeson likes to talk about from time to time. And I'm going to go ahead and move into our next matchup, who is currently at the top of the shop, the current overall number one ranked team, being the Mad King with a 284.8, having finally put down Penis and his 201.8 in this matchup. Now, a lot of this came on the back of, oddly enough, Wilson Contreras, which is a very impressive point showing. But Ronald Acuna Jr. is also having a hell of a year.
Yeah, so I don't want to pump Ryan's tires too hard. So do you think Wilson Contreras got extra points for pissing Madison Bumgarner off? Because I feel like there was extra points there. Yeah, like just like ending his career by swinging too hard and pissing him off. I hope there was extra points for that. what I think is really interesting, though, is actually I want to talk about Penis. Yandy Diaz. I mean, that's a thick part of the penis, you know, like he is killing it this year. And he has been nothing but awesome, which is just proof that you can find talent on the waiver wire. Not just like, I'll put it in my lineup, whatever, like good keeper level talent. Like every year at the beginning of the year, there's always guys where it's like, you think about picking them up. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. And there's always like one that just turns out to be like a keeper worthy stud that you're like, damn, I wish I picked that guy up. And Yandy Diaz might be that guy for a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree. And I would typically say that it happens more in the relief pitchers ranks as opposed to a positions player. And I think the interesting part about Yandy Diaz specifically is that there are two guys in that minor league system that are just waiting for him to fall off, right? Manzardo and Meade are both down there just raking in AAA. And it doesn't matter because Yandy's massive biceps are just holding them down, right? Like this mega Lucy pushing on their head to keep them down in the minors just that little bit longer. But with Yandy Diaz, though, it's streaky, and it's hard to really feel that it's consistent. Having watched him play now for a number of years in the AL East, it's like you look at him and you look at his swing plane and you look at his contact numbers and his knowledge of the strike zone, and then you watch him just Hosmer the shit out of the ball and never getting any lift whatsoever. And so it ends up not translating long term.
I have a few points actually. So I actually thought you were going to say former Ryan Neeson prospect favorite Vidal Brujan was being blocked, but clearly you went the Curtis Meade and Kyle Manzardo way, which is probably for the best. But I can't take credit for this next stat, but it is interesting. So I'm a big advocate of the CBS Fantasy Baseball podcast.
Okay.
And they pointed out on their podcast today, I believe, and I checked the statistics to back this up, but the Tampa Bay Rays are 20-3 for people who are not following Major League Baseball, which is insane.
Yep.
But apparently the Rays this offseason developed an organizational philosophy where they were going to get the majority of their hitters to drastically raise their launch angle. And if you check Yandy Diaz, I checked Randy Rosarena and Wander Franco specifically, because those are guys I was interested in, and they have career-high launch angles. And I'm not talking like a couple degrees one way or the other. I'm talking like a 50% difference over their highest career averages. So the Rays are putting the ball in the air more. I didn't check this, but I wouldn't be surprised if Yandy Diaz was drastically putting the ball in the air more as well. And that could be what's fueling their breakouts.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly could be. He's already got 6 home runs on the year, which is going to be – it's putting him on paces he's simply never had. So you could be right. You could be onto something.
Ryan would be upset if we didn't glorify his team. So I will say, like we've been saying, Ryan's team is great. I think we all acknowledge that. And I think we all agree Ryan's team worth and Ryan's season will be defined on his playoff success.
I mean, yeah, and much in the same way that we could say about Tillo, like he's always going to be in the playoffs, more likely than not. And so until that doesn't happen, the story will always be, okay, but what round are they being kicked out of?
Sure, yeah, agreed.
All right, well, do you know who hasn't had a big run at the playoffs lately? And I'm going to jump around a little bit, and unfortunately, sir, we're going to jump to your matchup next because the Seattle Monstars are actually the number 2 team overall, and they put up a bit of a beating on you this past week. We didn't talk about your matchup at all the week previous, so we're going to have to dig in this week.
That's okay.
But Ian put up a 284.6 against your 177.0. Stad's now 3-0. Jeremiah now 0-3. I'll point out that Ohtani, Semien, and Guerrero are once again Stad's top 3, so not that surprising. But what have you got to say for yourself, sir?
Well, that's kind of where I was going, right? His team is winning in exactly the way that me and you probably, especially you, would both think he's going to win.
Yep.
He is riding the elite players to the end of the earth. Like if this was real life, those guys would be gas and he'd be pushing them for more. So Ohtani's a freak. Ohtani is like, we've been over this, but he is the most powerful in this kind of league where he's in a daily lineup. He can be either or. You are maximizing his points. There is nobody within the stratosphere fantasy-wise as Shohei Ohtani. It's unfair. It's really just frankly unfair because you're getting 2 top 10-ish level players in one player. And that's just unquantifiable in terms of value. That being said, and I've spoken to Ian about this, I think he needs a little bit more depth. I think that would really push him over the top. He doesn't need more stars. We can see from his point total here, he's got the horses, but he needs the supporting cast of secondary pieces to be there when Vlad has a bad week, when Semien's not firing on all cylinders, or if Ohtani takes some time off from pitching for whatever reason.
Yeah. I mean, the season's young, but he is putting up some very impressive numbers regardless of how he's doing it. And with the format change, and we've touched on this a little bit, but with the format change, moving from divisions to just the pure power conference approach, these points early in the season, they will matter later on, right? That's your first tiebreaker now, is just how many points have you scored, right? If you've got the same record as somebody else and you've got 300 more points than them, you win. It's just that simple. And putting up these kinds of point totals early is definitely helping that case for him later on.
Well, absolutely. And I think, so one theory I have about why the top of the league looks so different, I didn't write this in the article I posted on the weekend. People should check that out, by the way, if they haven't been on the site lately, please go look at the article. Biggest surprises and disappointments so far. It's a good read. Fun time. But I think that the relief pitching market, the way that we made changes to the scoring, has really evened out a big area for a lot of teams that were struggling in this area in the past. And that would include the Grahams, the Ians, the Aidens of the world, who didn't necessarily have a bunch of high picks to build a pen like Ryan does every year. But they were able to find a lot of guys because the amount of relievers who were serviceable in a saves and holds league is way more than just a saves league. And so when you take away that advantage, now the other areas become worth more, they become more important, and that's where those guys are able to make up ground, whereas in previous years, they were at a deficit in another area. So that's my theory. I don't know if it's true, but would love your thoughts.
Well, I mean, my thoughts are they're fairly selfish, but while I agreed with this change, I actually felt that sort of managing the bullpen, so to speak, was one of my strengths and one of the areas that I'd been able to sort of lift my otherwise substandard team into, you know, into the ranks of the playoffs for a couple of years in a row. And with this flattening of that talent, it's made it a little bit easier for everybody else to sort of, you know, reach my skill level, if you will, of running a bullpen. So it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out and if I can find other places to sort of flex on these fools, if you will.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I mean, that train has definitely left the station. You know, one of us, I'll bring it to league management the next meeting there that you're unhappy about the flattening of the RP market.
Yes. And clearly, we if we know anything, it's that being the host of the podcast gives you undue powers over the situations of our league.
Well, just look at the last guy that hosted it. He faked his fantasy fucking death and now he's back. So
Now
you
he's
can do whatever
back.
you want. Yeah.
Now he's back. Well, I couldn't help but notice that we didn't talk much about your squad in this at all. But Bryce Elder is an interesting aspect. He's your third best scorer this past week.
Sure.
You know, young kid, I want to say he's 23 playing with the Braves there, really taking the biggest advantage of the opportunities that are put in front of him, despite some of the injuries and honestly some people that were sent down in spring training that weren't necessarily expected. But you know, like doesn't throw hard, but throws effectively. You know, another one of those ground ball specialist types, which is interesting because Atlanta doesn't really rely on those on average.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, like when you said we don't talk about my team, I was going to say, do you stop and look at a dumpster fire when you walk by, or do you just like, oh, okay? But Elder, as people point out to me, Elder doesn't throw very hard, and that's a fair point. But I don't really care, right? Like if you're going deep into games, you're not a complete zero in strikeouts. I mean, you're going to get quality starts, you're going to get points. Sure, he's not striking out 12 guys a game, but 15, 16 points a start. Seems to be within his wheelhouse, and he did do this last year in a small sample size, right? People are quick to point out it was the Marlins and Nationals a lot, and that's fair, but the matchups this season haven't been like that. So I'm very excited about it, and he seems to have surpassed Mike Soroka as the fifth starter, so that's good news.
Yeah, and I mean, you know what? Sometimes trash can be buffed up and upcycled. And I'm not saying that's precisely what Mr. Elder is, but you know, it wouldn't have been surprising to find him on a waiver wire. So good job, nice work. Keep the build going, shall we say.
Yes, keep the build going.
All right. Well, let's keep the podcast going and jump now to the third overall team, who also extended his win streak to three. But the big beefy baseball boys, with Graham, put up a 257.4, taking out Flex at 180.4. Flex falls to 1-2-0. While I said Graham is now 3-0, another 3-0 team. Nico Horner seems to be better than I think even the Cubs expected.
This is like Nico Horner is like a philosophical thing for prospects, right? Like, a lot of people, myself included, we want our prospects to come up. We want them to be amazing right off the hop. And when they're not, we're like, well, they're bust. That's the end of the road. But Nico Horner is a perfect example of a guy who, yeah, he got here. He came with, he was a decent prospect, if I remember, top 20, top 30, but it's taken him, what, 3 years now to put it together? But if this is him putting it together, I mean, that's a pretty good outcome. That's probably a top 50 player. And I'd wait a couple years for a top 50 player to pan out.
I mean, he's
So,
certainly putting up that kind of a point total so far.
yeah, like it, obviously, if he continues it, right? But I think it's been worth the wait. So I think it's just proof that you got to wait a little bit with prospects. They don't always come up and bust out right away. And I mean, Vlad Guerrero was a good example of that, right? So I think we've just been spoiled with the Acunas and the Tatis and the, even the Devers of the world, right? Like they come up and they're just awesome. And we think everybody's like that, but it's not necessarily the case.
Well, fair enough. And talking about being patient, on the other side of this, we've got Logan Webb and Corbin Carroll making an appearance in the top three for flex. They're not massive point totals, but it's got to feel good to see some of those guys that you know he's been waiting on for a while finally coming through.
Yeah, and flex is coming, man. Like, he's one of those teams, I think, you give him another year or two, you give him a little bit more time for his guys to come up. I think he's going to be in that conversation definitely next year. Now he's 1-2 now, but he might be a good candidate for a Europa win.
That would be a bit of a hot take. Unless you're saying he could make a win in the first round of Europa.
No, I mean the whole thing. Yeah.
I mean, good if you can do it. It would be a pretty big step up from where he's been these last couple of years.
Yeah, I guess he's sick of winning things with his own face on it. So,
oh, it could be that. Well, how about we shift over then to the team that we are used to seeing be 500 by the end of the season, but instead ripping off a third straight win are the Stubby Clap Clappers and the Elder McInnes coming through with a 200.4 to a 196.7 win over Mr. Chow, surprisingly enough, with Size Matters. I didn't expect this one, did you?
No, I don't think either of us picked Garth McInnes, although you could correct me on that. I definitely...
We didn't.
Yeah, we didn't. I didn't think so. You know what? This is a weird one. And when I go look at Chow's team, I'm like, what the hell went wrong this week? Well, when Matt Carpenter is your top scorer, that's what went wrong. When your third scorer is a guy that many of us cannot pronounce this man's name.
What's wrong with Winkowski? Wrong. Come on.
Nothing's wrong with Winkowski, but I think I think that he's not the kind of guy you want in your top three. I kind of think Chow needs to make a move. Like, I think he needs to make a trade or something to kind of jumpstart the troops, you know? That's my take.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly could, but I mean, how can you keep down Hunter Renfro? You know, Mike Trout's twin on his own team. He has been a shockingly good fit there on that team, sort of helping out with an offense that has needed some help. If we're going to be honest, it would be better if he could pitch. There's no two ways about that, but. The Elder McInnes doesn't need to worry about pitching because Spencer Strider is a revelation.
Man, top five pitcher in baseball, I don't think is hyperbole.
Not right now, certainly not. Yeah,
I don't think I mean going forward too. I don't think that's hyperbole to say. Like, the guy is a K machine. The question I have for Spencer Strider, and I have it with a few of the top pitchers, is can he sustain it over, like, let's say 170 innings?
Mm-hmm.
That'll be the question, because if he can, sky's the limit.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen guys come up and be like fabulous early in their careers, right? Like, yeah, have one or two or sometimes even 3 years where they're just effectively untouchable, and then the league figures them out, right? Like, Dontrell Willis is one of my favorite examples of this, the old D train going way back into the history.
Oh, man.
But when he came up, he was untouchable, and I'm pretty sure he won a Cy Young or was like in the top three in voting of it for 1 year.
Yeah,
and then there was nothing that the all of the smoke and mirrors went away, and the league was just only too happy to take batting practice against him. Now, obviously, what Spencer Strider is doing is a little bit different. It's not just smoke and mirrors, it's just raw stuff with every single outing. But we already kind of know what that ends up being as well, particularly when you've only got two pitches, right? If anything falls off on either of those pitches, the league will just spit on the one they can't hit and they'll drive the other one. And we've seen that happen over and over and over again. So it'll be interesting to see just how long he can go, or if he adds a third or possibly even a fourth pitch. You know, starters do that from time to time. But for now, he's disgusting, and it's hard to argue he'd change anything given the results we're seeing.
And you aged yourself hard with that Dontrell Willis pick.
You loved it.
You know what? Like, so I'm too young for this, but I feel like he was elite when he played for the Marlins. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yep.
And then he was a complete gas can with the Detroit Tigers, is what I remember. But there's probably stops in between. I just am too young to remember them all. But I think the difference with Strider is, like you pointed out, the stuff, right? Like, I think we can agree he's getting near, like, Jacob deGrom level in terms of his stuff. But the thing I worry about with Strider and with deGrom, obviously, is when you're throwing that hard, the wear and tear on your body and the health concerns that inevitably follow. So if, like you said, the performance doesn't get him, the health and injury and tear might.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, good career while you've got it, right? Like, he's already in the record books with his performance last year. And if he keeps going at this, it's probably not the last record he'll hold.
No, it's probably one of the best rookie seasons ever for a pitcher. So
It's up there for sure. All right. Well, let's go ahead and keep advancing through as we need to bring up another 3-0 team, as the currently sixth place Squirtle Squad put up a 243.6 and took down Ben with a 212.5. Now, I don't know how the scoring could change, but I'd be very surprised if a scoring update made Ben a winner after this loss.
I mean, don't question Ben's ability to lobby ESPN for a scoring change. The one thing I'm noticing, though, is there are a lot more relief pitchers, it seems like, in the upper echelons of scoring than there were in the past. I do think, like, Phil Maton, for example, third highest scorer on the Squirtle Squad, he doesn't close games. He pitches a lot. He gets holds, but he doesn't close. And he doesn't really strike a ton of guys out. But because he's just a sheer quantity dump for the Astros, he put up good points. And I think we're seeing more of that, right? Like, we're seeing more guys just kind of be used a shitload, putting up 12, 15 points a week. So it'll be interesting to see how that impacts the scoring. And from Ben's perspective, he needs his guys to be better, like his top guys to be better, right? Like, Jazz, Chisholm hasn't been great. Goldschmidt's not MVP so far this year. And it's starting to catch up with him, I think, a bit.
Yeah, and I mean, It can be hard. We're still sort of looking at small sample sizes, right? Like, we haven't even hit 100 at-bats on the season. I think actually Ronald Acuña is leading the league right now in at-bats. I mean, he's not walking, so but I want to say he's at like 90, 91, something like that coming into tonight. So, like, we're still dealing with some small sample sizes, but I don't know. It might be time to start being a little bit worried, right? Like, we both had Ben as a consensus playoff team, and he's sitting 1-2 and 10th overall. There's some room he's got to make up still.
Yeah, I think, and this goes for a few teams that we've been talking about, but I do, like, I'm more proactive than I am reactive, so I admittedly would make a move a lot sooner than most people would, but I do wonder, when you look at a team like Vanry, you look at a team like Chow or a few other teams, why not do something? Why not call somebody up? Hey, you're not doing so hot. You want to swap this guy for that guy? Like, even if they are doing good, hey, yeah, I see that guy's performing pretty hot right now. Let me get a piece of that. Or this guy's underperforming, but I think he could turn around. Like, something to kind of kickstart it, right? Because sitting on the same guys over and over and over, and I get it's a small sample, but continually sitting on guys on down years is a good way to find yourself in Europa.
Which may or may not get you a high pick next year to fix the problem.
Won't. Don't do it. It won't. They'll take it from you.
So biased. You're so biased. Yeah, no, and I mean, it is hard, right? Like, you've got your guys that you kept, and you kept them for all the right reason, and off-season hype is higher than at any other point of the year. But what do you do when your expected studs aren't? Yeah, it's a tough one.
It's a good question. We should have a whole show about trades. But if you're me, you're wheeling and dealing. But if you're other people who are more risk-averse, you're probably holding and seeing what happens. And I guess that's what we're seeing here. And I just am philosophically opposed to that, but that doesn't mean it's the wrong thing to do.
Well, that's fair. Well, let's go ahead and move on, because ultimately, I don't think there's too much that we need to say about the Squirtle Squad. They're 3-0. They are still the kings of all the moves. Nimmo and Yelich, Matan, yep, all doing well. But I think we need to move on to the top of the 2-1 teams. Finally, we're not just dealing with a team that has an undefeated season here, but the director of the FFFBPA, the one and only Aiden, had a 221.3 victory over your fade, the man, at 161.3.
Yeah, I'm going to continue to fade him all season, but I would like to point out the second highest score on Aiden's team. For all those people, every week I keep doing this now, but who ripped that Kevin Gausman deal, well, it is looking pretty damn great, if you ask me. And that goes for you too, Mr. Newton, who said Kevin Gausman would be trash. But I think you also owe an apology to another individual. I think you know who I'm talking about. He was the leading scorer on the man's team. He, in fact, did pitch and was excellent. You owe an apology to Mr. Jacob DeGrom.
I will apologize to Jacob DeGrom the next time that he comes up and visits me here in New Hampshire.
Well, he might be Jacob DeGrom if he has to come up to New Hamburg.
I mean, we'll see him in Toronto presumably at some point with the new schedule. But I mean, the question has never been whether or not Jacob DeGrom could pitch well. The question has always been whether or not Jacob DeGrom was going to pitch. Right. When he's on the mound, he is, I'll say it, he is the single best pitcher in the bigs. Any pitcher better than Otani, better than Strider, better than pick your favorite closer. He has closer stuff as a starter. The problem is that he also gets about a closer's number of innings over the course of the season. And that is really hard to combine, particularly when you need him to be at the top of your fantasy team like Nick does.
No, and these are fair points. But don't look now. He has pitched 25 innings, 26 innings so far successfully. I'm with you. He's not going to throw 200 innings. I think those days are gone. But I disagree that he's going to throw a closer's amount of innings or a relief pitcher's amount of innings. I mean, I don't know a relief pitcher that'll throw you 110 innings. I don't. So I think that's well within the realm. And I think even you said when we did this exercise that you thought he would be 130 innings or so. Correct me if I'm wrong there. So that, you know, that's like two closers. So he's two closers worth, but with the same amount of points on a per inning basis. I mean, I'll take that.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. If I had him on my team, I would play him. But I could say that same thing about Zach Gallen or Kevin Gausman, who both put up good point totals for Aiden on the winning side of this equation. So it's clear that just having DeGrom isn't enough. There needs to be more. It's more the idea that if the man doesn't have DeGrom, the man has nothing.
Well, he would tell you, I'm sure, if he were here. Nick, get the hell on the podcast. You've asked me multiple weeks in a row now to be on it, only to bail. That Jose Altuve being out severely impacts his team. And that might be a fair point, because Nick is not particularly deep at any point in his roster. So that's a big blow for him. For Aiden, I mean, we've been saying this with a few teams, but it's exactly how he probably drew it up, right?
Yeah.
So
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, Aiden to me, and Aiden to me is probably like a bottom half playoff team, but he's still a playoff team.
I mean, yeah, if you can get there, anything can happen. You know, one win and you're in the semis. It's just that simple. So yeah, get there first and then see. Speaking of somebody who could get there, let's go ahead and move along to our eighth place overall team, a team that almost had the top score of the week. But RKR's Bash Brothers puts up a 295 over Kaminsky's Illuminati, who barely scratched the surface at a 163.7. Now, RKR is a strong 2-1 team. Kaminsky is a pathetic 0-3 and the worst overall. What surprises you more, Eduardo Rodriguez putting up 48 points or Kaminsky being 0-3?
Oh, Eduardo Rodriguez putting up 48 points. It's not even close. Like, I could have told you Kaminsky be 0-3 at the beginning of the year. I could tell you right now he ain't getting more than 4 wins this year, period, point blank.
Wow.
It's not happening. Mark me down now. You can put it in a thing. You can take a point off my end of season total if I get it wrong. Give me one if I get it right. He is not getting more than 4 wins this season. Eduardo Rodriguez being decent is kind of surprising because he's had so many bad years in a row. He had myocarditis during COVID. He left the team randomly, I think, to go back to his home country. I don't know if that's because Detroit's just a terrible place to live. Whatever. But I think, I don't know. But Cody Bellinger is actually, now I'm biased as a former Bellinger owner, but he seems to be putting it together and not just figuring it out, but being like MVP almost level Cody Bellinger, which has got to be exciting for RKR to have. So I think the sky's the limit for him. I really do. Like, not just Bellinger. I think RKR's got a lot of room for growth here.
Which is kind of scary, because if he's touching almost 300, granted against a weak opponent, but again, those points matter. And so if he's just starting to grow and there's more room coming, RKR is going to be as scary a team as he has looked to be in the past. However, RKR also can put up a 163 himself in any given week sometimes when it just doesn't all come together. He does seem to be very, very streaky, the voodoo magic and whatnot, where some week he'll put up, 325, and the next week it'll be a 150, and you'll be wondering and scratching your head what went wrong.
Well, I want to push back on that a little bit. I agree with you. In the past, that was probably the case. I don't think, and I'm just trying to look back now to see, but I don't think he's put up a crappy point total like below 200 this year. I think he's been 240 or higher every week. And granted, it's only a 3-week sample size. Mm-hmm. I'm just double checking here. Yeah, he put up 345, 246, and then this point total. Mm-hmm. So he has not been below 240 this year. And my idea on his room for growth is, well, Juan Soto's having about the worst season you would expect for Juan Soto. So if he puts it together, definitely a 300 point ceiling every week.
Yeah, that's fair. Any positives for Kaminsky before I move on?
You know what? Like Kaminsky is an interesting team. He's like flex level bad, but I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel in terms of like up and coming guys right now. He's got some really good prospects. I think we can agree on that. But in terms of his major league roster, there's not a ton there, like not a lot. So I think he's going to be bad for a while. What about you?
Yeah, which is, I don't know. It's kind of sad. Like I remember, and you mentioned flex level bad, and now that Kaminsky is there, we're talking about two of the owners that when I joined this league, that was the unassailable top of the redacted division. And I remember, and both of these guys will validate this, but I celebrated my first career victory against each of them because it had come on the tails of like 7 or 8 consecutive losses to each of them. It was a big deal for me. Because they were at the top of my division, and in doing so, they were always in the playoffs and pushing once they were in there. And so to see them both at the bottom, I don't know. I don't mean to get maudlin, but it does. It makes me a little sad.
Yeah, but I think like Flex is already on his way back up. Kaminsky's digging the trench, but this stuff doesn't last forever either way, right? Like it's not. They weren't going to be good forever. I remember Flex trading, like, I think it was like Bryce Harper.
It was, yeah.
Was it Corey Seager too, maybe? And like something else for like just a boatload of prospects. And Kaminsky did more of like a piece by piece teardown where everyone in the league got a piece. And I was uber confused because I think he traded like 29-year-old Mike Trout and like Jose Ramirez at like 27. And you were like, okay, this rebuild is like unnecessary at this point when you own like 2 of the top 5 players or 3 of the top 5 players in the league, probably relax. But Flex, you could understand, right? I think the problem for Mike is he ended up, and I don't want to be harsh, but he got basically nothing for those players. And so it's going to take him much, much longer than it took Flex to come back up.
Maybe. It still makes me sad, although I will happily take a victory against either of them whenever my team next faces them. And I'll still celebrate because, you know what? When even when the Yankees are bad, you cheer when you beat them.
Who's the Yankees and who's the Red Sox there, though?
You know what? It doesn't even really matter, right? We'll go ahead and say that that Flex is the Yankees because it's going to happen again sooner, and that Kaminsky is going to be the Red Sox because it seems to be filled with foreigners, and he's not even in North America.
He'd want to be Pittsburgh, though.
He would want to be Pittsburgh, but Pittsburgh is good, and the Illuminati are not. So I don't know. We'll have to wait a couple years before he can take that. But speaking of people who are waiting, the Midland Raccoons are ninth overall team now, also at 2-1, put up a 268.1 over Chris's Mummy's Good Boys, falling to 1-2 with their 247.3. Now, the Midland Raccoons could have been a 3-0 team if it wasn't for one quality start this past week. So, what are your thoughts on that? We see Kershaw putting up a big, kind of classic Kershaw point total this past week.
I want to talk more about the ESPN thing than I do either of these teams, because I think that's
okay.
Ridiculous that ESPN would alter a start like a week after the fact. I don't think it's that hard to like check a box score from MLB like the next day and fix it, or to like put up a notice on their site explaining why something was corrected a week later. I think that's insanity. And just like a good reason for us to switch platforms. It doesn't have to be to Fantrax, although I am a pro Fantrax person, as we all talked about today. Right. I don't buy what the Raccoons are selling right now. I don't have like some ridiculously well thought out reason for that, other than like I don't expect Kershaw to continue at this level. I don't think like a Nick Martinez is somebody who's going to keep putting up high point totals. I don't love their players. I think they're all hitting like what you would consider to be their 90th or 95th percentile outcome. Like, is Jared Kelnick going to carry this all season? I don't think so. So I don't buy that. I think Mummy's Good Boys and Midland Raccoons could easily be switching a record, and they could easily be with like back to back in the standings at the end of the year.
I mean, that'd be a fairly hot take, I think, just given what we're seeing his team do. Specifically, like, are we that convinced in Jonah Heim be able to put up a 30-point week every Patrick Wisdom? I mean, sure, he's done it in the past, but who's going to do it, right? How are we going to make that consistently if he's going to flip in these standings, if that's the case?
Well, I guess I don't mean, like, literally swap spots, but what I mean is, like, if you told me, like, the Midland Raccoons finish, like, how many matches are there? There's 19, right? If you told me the Raccoons were like 7-12, or say Mommy's Good Boy was 7-12, and the Raccoons were like 8-11, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, that wouldn't shock me in any sense of the word.
Okay.
So I don't really believe in either of these teams, I guess, is my point.
All right, fair enough. Well, let's go ahead and finish it off. By my accounting, we've hit all of the other matchups on our count from 1 to 10, which leaves the only matchup that had two of the teams in the bottom half of the division. The 13th place, A Measure of Force, going up against the 15th place, Houston Alliance, and somewhat incredibly, the Force pulled out a 100-point victory with a 234.5 to Husan's rather pathetic 131.2. All on the back of Max Muncy, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had the patience to own Max Muncy, because I did for a period, and then I think I traded him to you. But I wish I had the patience, because Max Muncy, but the owners of Max Muncy in fantasy have been waiting for this for years. Probably a year and a half now for Max Muncy to be Max Muncy. And this is what Max Muncy being Max Muncy would look like.
Yeah.
So I think you're getting exactly what you paid for with him. Christian Walker, I mean, I turn my nose up at, but I feel like he's like criminally underrated as a player. But he's not sexy, right? Like, he's not like a flashy player. He's just solid. And this is what solid looks like, I think. And that's fair. You know, Craig Kimbrel being Craig Kimbrel is nice, but I think this is more an indictment on Jamil than it is a success story for you.
Okay.
And I say that because, like, where is he going? Like, his team's old. I don't know if he has a ton of prospects that he can call up to fortify the team. So where's the direction here? Because Jamil's always going for it, right? So where are we headed? Because it doesn't look like he's heading for a playoff spot in my books.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about Jamil's minor league team last week specifically, and there are some pieces down there. And typically, earlier in this very podcast, you were always asking, you know, like, oh, I would be training everything. I'd be looking to make the moves, get the pieces. And yeah. Jamil has shown that time and time again that he is on that same page, perhaps not as aggressive as you are. But he's usually at the helm of one or two fairly significant moves that change the course of his team as and when that is needed, which has always made him a little bit more of a, I would say, a more competitive opponent, particularly in the back half of the season. So it could just be that we might be seeing another one of those, or, you know, maybe he's just distracted. You know, children do that.
Yeah, I mean, you would know. I wouldn't know, I feel like Jamil's team is like a lifeboat with a hole in it. It's always taking on water. He's always scooping it out with a bucket, and he's trying to keep it above water. And he, like you said, he makes a trade or two every year where I'm like, how did he pull that off? How did he convince that owner to do that? And it always works out for him. I think back to like Jose Abreu was a trade he made. Sal Perez, I think, was a trade he made. So you're wondering like how that happens, but I just don't know if this year that will be enough.
Okay. Well, we're through week three now, so we've still got another 16 weeks for Jamil to pull it out of the hat, so to speak. But with the conclusion of our week three review, it's time to slide over to the picks update, as we have been diligently keeping track of all of our picks from one week to the next. And this past week, we had basically the exact same picks, except for Ben versus the Squirtle Squad, where I chose Ben and was burned. The Squirtle Squad did pull out that victory. And so, Jeremiah, it means that for this week, you took an 8-7 victory from me in our picks matchup, putting the overall to a 2-pick separation at 22-20 with yours truly in favor. So with that, I'll be honest, I did start sort of looking at rhyming slangs, seeing if, you know, if I don't go full Cockney in my potential rap battle future. But you know, I'll put the knee in the cock as necessary.
I was gonna ask you, did you do anything? But I guess the other thing is, like, we got to get this, like, picks thing sponsored by somebody, I feel like, you know, like picks update brought to you by, like, Schneider's Hot Dogs or something. I don't know. Memorabilia.
Yeah, I mean, the memorabilia is the obvious one, but if we're going to go with like, the hot dog or whatever, don't we have to be rapping about penis?
Oh, like, 100%. Obvious, right? Yeah, dog in a bun. We got to. Got to get some like covert hot dog references in their app there.
There it is.
Probably contractually. But yeah, I mean, Authentic Memorabilia Company, please sponsor this segment, I guess.
There you go. The unabashed request for cash by Jeremiah.
Or memorabilia. I'm not picky.
That's fair. That's fair. Well, speaking of not being picky, you actually put up an article this week, and I figure if we've got a platform and you're putting out stuff, we might as well talk about it. And actually, I was wondering if maybe we don't talk about Stad's article a little bit as well. But let's go ahead and start with yours. You posted your early season's judgments article, sort of your five up, five down, if you will, with your biggest surprises, as well as the biggest disappointments. Overall, do you have any comments you'd like to call to mind?
So like this article is meant to be a mixture of both fantasy and real life baseball, because I think they impact each other. But it's also meant to set up the next three-part series I plan on writing, which is my projections for each level of the playoffs. So I like to overreact. I like to make predictions early, and we can track those and see how they come at the end of the year. But I'm going to write an article for the Vays, for Europa, and for the playoffs, where I outline the participants that I believe will be in each and how I think those matchups will unfold. Right. And we did kind of, we've been hinting on that on this podcast, but I think that'll be something for people to follow along. And this article is really meant to set the stage for that, because I think the environment that we're all playing in is a lot different, right? Mm-hmm. And so real life baseball is a lot different. Steals are more common. Pitching is a lot harder to find. That's good. And the teams, like the fantasy landscape in our league is way different. So I think I just wanted to bring people's attention to that before we kind of get into where I think everyone will end up, because it'll set the stage for these kind of different predictions that I'm going to make.
Interesting. Interesting. When I read over it, there were sort of two things that stood out for me. I was surprised that the game is so much faster was your number five, because for me, that's the single number one. And to put it in perspective, one of the main reasons that I haven't taken any of my children to a baseball game is, one, it's a, 2-hour drive to Toronto plus parking plus all that bullshit with young kids. It's a pain in the ass. But to then try and sandwich, a 4-hour game in the middle of it is just no fun for anyone. But now that we're starting to play in like the 2 hours and 30 minutes, if you get the right night or less, you know what? I am making plans to take my 8-year-old daughter out to see a Jays game, possibly later this season. So that's been very interesting and very, very impactful as well, because like I used to try and stay up to watch the Sunday Night Classic, not because I enjoyed the announcers, because holy Hannah, do I not? But oftentimes it would just be so late at night, and now they're done before 10, and it's crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, I think I was biased when I wrote this article too, because I went to a game, and it wasn't that much shorter. Like I think it was 3 hours and 10 minutes or something, but it was a high scoring Jays Rays game, and what do you expect? So you kind of got to get a game where it's like 2-1, 3-2, for you to really feel that benefit. If the teams are just slugging it back and forth offensively, like it's going to be a drag. But I have sat at games that went to extra innings and you're there like 4 hours and you're like, I don't even want to be here anymore, man. Like, but I've already paid for the ticket and I don't want to leave early. So it is better, but I think I was coming off that experience. And so I tempered it in my list for that reason.
That's fair. The other thing that I took note of personally was your position on the rookie players. Not necessarily delivering, and obviously yes, you make comparisons to how the expectations are for the next Acuna, the next Tatis, or the like, but functionally speaking, it's not like Volpe has been bad. It's not like Torkelson was bad last year, and I'll be honest, and this is as a manager who has now for 2 years running just called up his guys the second that they've hit the bigs. Honestly, it adds another layer of fun to following the team, right? Like obviously, yeah, the rook is risky, but you know what? Sometimes that's just fun. And so I really love that Major League Baseball has taken a similar approach where rookies are getting called up more often than ever before, and not just for that cup of coffee in September. And it's possible that the CBA changes have had that positive effect when you consider what last year has looked like, and then again, what this year has looked like. But you know what? That's fun too, right? The let the kids play used to be their motto and horrible marketing scheme, but maybe they should have just held it for this year.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. I think the service time manipulation thing, it was good that they got rid of that, or at least disenfranchised it from happening. I do like the rookie patches that are on the uniforms for those guys. I think that's a cool touch.
Fair.
I think my point was more that we expect these guys to be good. And I've touched on this podcast for sure. Like we expect these guys to be good. We grew up, or at least I grew up in the Acuña era where guys were, or the Lindor era where guys were just immediately awesome. And I think we need to temper our expectations with that. Volpe hasn't been bad. And I'm not saying the top prospects haven't are bad, but they haven't been Acuna when they get to the majors either. Instant success. They've been solid or okay, but they haven't been amazing. And I think that's kind of where we're headed with a lot of guys. Like, if you think about Torkelson and you think about Jared Kelnick and you think about Riley Green, like, those guys did not hit the ground running in the majors when they got called up. And even Julio Rodriguez and Bobby Witt, two guys who we generally see as stars, didn't hit the ground running when they started either, right? The first few months, they were terrible. So I think there's just a steeper learning curve, I guess, is what I was trying to say there. For these newer prospects.
Could be, but I guarantee you, if you are the manager that owned Julio Rodriguez last year in his rookie of the year season, or even Michael Harris II, who also took home that honor on the other side, having beaten out Spencer Strider by a hair, any of those three guys, if you had them from the start as rookies, you're not feeling sad about that risk and gamble you took.
Oh, definitely not. But if you own, like I said, if you own Jared Kelnick, if you own Spencer Torkelson, if you own Riley Green, if you own this year Ezekiel Tovar, I mean, you're kind of sad, right? You expected more. It's been disappointing. Who's been good this year in prospects? James Outman has been good.
There's a couple.
Yeah. Cassis has been terrible.
Cassis has struggled.
Young's been okay. Like, he had that 2-homer game last night, but before that, he was not been great.
Yeah.
Henderson hasn't been great. Like, there's a lot of guys, and these guys are, like, highly regarded prospects, right? They're not just bums. They're not, like, fringy top 100 guys.
Yeah. We'll have to see. We're only 3 weeks in, and some of these kids are still, you know, some of these kids are seeing parks for the first time in their actual lives as well, right? Like, it's going to take a little bit of time to let the moisture behind their ears dry off, so to speak.
That's a good point, and it is a small sample size, so point taken.
Excellent. Well, then, with that point, let's shift over and have a quick conversation about the other article that came out this week, because, you see, I want to encourage people to write more, and if my talking about your work makes people write more, I'm all for it. So, Stads, come on down. Put together a very interesting draft analysis. And one of the interesting things that I like about this is that it actually has a counterpoint to that conversation we just had, because in our league, being as kind of unique as it is, you really can't draft any of those upcoming exciting rookies in the major league draft with any of those 10 picks. And so you get an interesting sort of approach that you have to take. Are you building for the future and trying to find fringe guys, or are you just trying to fill out the roster? Are you trying to find that best relief package core to be able to make that happen as well? What were your thoughts in this article?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I only gave it a quick skim, but because it loses me sometimes when it talks about graphs and points and the math things, right? Because I'm not a math guy. But I do agree with the general premise of the article, and I do think I remember looking at the graphs and thinking, like, the top three people in the points, like, I think I was in there.
Uh-huh.
I want to say, like, Graham or somebody was at the top. Like, teams that you would expect it were, they were gunning for it at the draft, and that checks, like, that tracks for me, right? Like, if you're trying to go for it, you're in theory drafting the best possible players all the time. If you're rebuilding, and I know this is just common sense, you're going to be drafting guys who are probably not going to be putting up a lot of points right now. So the outlook really drives the bus, I guess, so to speaking, from the graph results there. But nothing too shocking, I guess.
I mean, the fact that you were the number three team, I found kind of shocking, because it's not like you have a lot of early draft capital. let's be honest. You know, Graham and Ian being at the top, and Stads calls it out himself as being, you know, sort of self-referential, right? Like, hey, they've had a really good start to the season. Of course, those 10 picks probably are really performing well. And that sort of goes without saying. But, you know, when you start to see other teams like Mike and Flex at the bottom, who we know are in rebuild, that they're still apparently taking low-performing things is a very interesting strategy. And I think that was, for me, was what that takeaway was, because when I was reading this article, I didn't see why everyone wasn't trying to get the best player at each of those levels. I mean, sure, every now and again, you may want to take that risk, but even if you're rebuilding, chances are you're grabbing a useful player that you could flip for something that probably has that later value down the line that you don't need out of the gate. But having that useful guy up front is trade bait.
Well, there's two points to that, right? So I've been telling Ryan this for years. You do not need good picks to get good bullpen help. Never believed that. That's why I've been comfortable trading away my picks every single year, because I don't think you need high-end picks to get high-end relievers. The second point, I guess, is that Flex and Mike don't necessarily believe, let's say, in picking up a pitcher, a relief pitcher, holding them for a long time, and then flipping them for like a marginal upgrade, right? That spot is better used on like a Brandon Pfaadt or an Ezekiel Tovar last year. Guys who, like, it's important to stash in your roster because you don't want another team like yourself getting them and holding them as like major league prospects and keeping them and then hoping they pan out the next year. And I think that's their strategy more than it is picking up like Jimmy Garcia and flipping him for a 22nd for a 25th. Because the margin, the value there is minimal, right? Whereas the payoff, if even one of those prospects hits, is exponentially higher. And that's kind of how I see their strategy, but I could be misinterpreting and putting words in their mouth.
Well, I mean, if it gets them to relevancy that much quicker, then maybe it's worth it.
Well, for Flex, I think we have seen that it's been helping him get to relevancy. Mike, I think that the jury's still out and it's too early to tell. Because it also partly depends on who you're picking, right? Like if you're picking shitty prospects and it doesn't pan out, well then, yeah, you probably should have taken the relief pitcher. But like if you're drafting a Pfaadt, or Flex has been really good at this. Like he's been picking up a lot of guys I noticed last year and this year. Ricky Tiedemann, for example, was a guy he picked up for a while.
Yeah.
Guys like that, like those are difference makers probably. Now I think he bought Tiedemann. The Tiedemann owner off at the end of the year, but nonetheless, like those are the kind of moves that can move the needle for you and turn around the direction of your team a lot quicker.
Fair enough. Well, we've talked about how the draft can impact a team in the short term and potentially the long term if you've done well. But we've also actually seen three trades happen this week, Jeremiah. Were there any of those three trades that you had your eye on as something you wanted to talk about in the trade recap part of our weekly podcast?
Well, refresh my brain here, because I know we had a trade and I'm already regretting it, but we had a trade.
We did.
But I don't know what else was there. So
we there was a trade between Flex and the Raccoons where Tommy Edmund was moved, a couple of picks and a prospect. Yeah. There was Aiden and Stads. Sort of swapping pitchers of all size and flavors. Tylor Megill being potentially the biggest piece on that, although, okay. And then, our trade where, you know, there was a couple of nobody major leaguers and a super young kid in the minors, yeah.
Okay, well, we can set aside the Aiden trade. No disrespect, but I don't think trading Tylor Megill for a couple RPs is going to do much for the trade juices. But I think it was Brandon Barea.
Yeah.
Right? And it was Tommy Edman. I mean, Tommy Edman is batting ninth for some reason for the Cardinals. They're doing weird shit this year where he's not leading off. So I don't know what his upside is long term, but he had a great year last year. And Brandon Barea is a first-round draft pick of the Jays, I believe, from this past draft.
Seems right.
No idea what he's going to be, although he did seem to be a steal, a lot of experts think, I think I read. Mm-hmm. So I'm not 100% sure what his upside is. I don't really have an opinion on it, do you, on that particular trade?
No, nothing really big on it. I mean, even back when I was doing the talking trades articles, this would be a classic, you know, players over picks or players over prospects in that respect. And I mean, and it's, I guess it's okay to be somewhat excited about, you know, a 19-year-old pitcher in the Jays farm system, you know, but that's a long way out, right? Like he's 19, he's a big boy, you know, 6'2", 180 at 19. That's kind of impressive. And he's already got a, you know, a fastball that's touching upper 90s. So, I mean, there's enough to be excited there, but we're not going to see that for 3 years, 3 or 4 years, right, at this point. So, you know, hooray, Tommy Edman. Congratulations. That was kind of my take on that one.
Well, if that's how you feel about that deal, then you're going to feel equally similar to the deal we pulled off, right? Two major leaguers for a guy who's 19 and we probably won't see for 3 years. Probably a similar outlook, but if you view it differently, I know we've talked about it. Go right ahead.
Yeah, so I mean, my review on our own trade, biases aside, Edwin Arroyo is young. But unlike Barreria, yeah, we're not even going to try it. Unlike Brandon.
Brandon's good.
Brandon, Edwin Arroyo played, you know, full season ball last year. And in doing so was the second youngest kid in single A and put up just ridiculous numbers, like had a ridiculous slash line showcasing that five tool stuff. And there's a lot to dream on in there. There was a reason that I was very happy to have picked him up, and then a little less happy to see him moved over to the Reds because he was really shining in Seattle's camp there. So yeah, like he's, you know, he has there's a lot of tools there that, that you can build on in that respect. Hyper athletic five tool shortstop types are fun.
Yeah. I mean, they are, but Jose Barrios coming around is a lot more fun. Maybe you could take your daughter to a Jose Barrios game like I went to and enjoy that ride. Cause he seems to be, I mean, he looks back to me. Like, I don't know. He had 9 strikeouts tonight, which is a lot by Jose Barrios standards. 7 innings, no runs. I think it was 24-point start. I mean,
yeah, that'll
work. Three starts in a row that are good. 2 really good quality starts in a row.
Yeah, the challenge with him is and always will be consistency, which has not been a hallmark of the Jays. Obviously, if he goes back to being what he was with Minnesota, then I'm super happy. And that's the kind of upside that I'm hoping for. But I'm not so naive as to believe that he's going to see that same caliber when he has to face all of the AL East teams so much, right? Like even tonight's performance, it was against the White Sox. He's always beat up the White Sox. He's had a billion outings against them, and cool, he's still capable of doing it. Love to see it. Ketel Marte has some rust on him as well, right? He is almost the poster child for the rabbit ball, and not having delivered ever since the juiced ball sort of went the way of the dodo. But you know, plays a hard to fill position at second base and on an up and coming team himself, right? And that was the appeal for me was Marte. He's got a middle of the order position on a team that has all the young talent you could hope for. A lot of speed, a lot of contact ability. So it's exciting to have those sort of guys for a little bit more of the long term.
Yeah, I think these are the kind of guys your team needs, right? Like, I think you need more of those decent floor, in Barrios' case, high ceiling guys. For Barrios, I guess, but just to put a bow on it, like, I do think you want to see the rest of the season and how it goes. If he's putting up these kind of starts for the rest of the season, I think we can affirmatively say he's getting close to Barrios from Minnesota.
Mm.
And that would be my kind of barometer, right? Is he a double-digit 10 or 11-point-per-game guy for the rest of the year?
I mean, if he is, the Jays are happy too.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
All right. Anything else we want to talk about around the trades, my friend?
No, I think we probably got to buzz through these matchups at this
point. So we're going to go through. We've as we had last week, we've already submitted our picks. So I'm going to go through fairly quickly, and we'll talk about the matchups where we both picked the same. We might as well start at the top with my own. We both picked a fourth quarter Jimmy Butler victory over the Measure of Force, though it's not looking good right now.
No, we both screwed up. Turns out your team's better than you thought it was. So,
And that was before picking up Berríos. I don't actually have his 24-point start in my lineup yet, so.
No. No, you do not.
All right. Well, if I'm the one that ends Tillo's reign of undefeated terror, I suppose I can be happy enough with that. Let's go ahead and jump down a little bit here. We've got, we both are on Aiden taking on Penis, and Aiden has an early lead as well. So that pick's looking good right now.
Yeah, I mean, Aiden seems to be able to handle his way around a Penis, no problem.
They don't make you a director if you can't. All right.
That's fair.
Moving on to the next shared pick. We're both on the Mad King over the Illuminati. Is there any shot at an upset for Kaminsky here?
I would say no. I mean, if Josiah Gray has another 22-point start, you know, we'll look out. But I don't see it being in the cards.
Yeah, no, I mean, Josiah Gray could have 3 20-point starts this week, and I still don't think it would come to fruition. So, yeah, I'm feeling pretty solid with that pick. However, the next pick that we're both on, we both had RKR taking out Chow, which might have been a reflection of how Chow has looked these last couple of weeks. But so far this week, RKR is putting up one of those, dare I say, forecasted really low point outings.
Well, this is your fault. You jinxed the guy to hell when you said he has these horrible weeks. Well, now he's going to have one. But this, I'm still confident in this matchup, actually, for both of us, right? Like, it's only 24 points. That is not an insurmountable lead whatsoever. I think he's still going to win the comeback.
All right. Well, maybe it'll be one of those close matchups that we all follow on Slack, which is good fun on Sunday afternoons for sure. All right. Well, the next matchup that we were both picked the same would have been the Squirtle Squad beating Chris's Mummy's Good Boys. And so far with a 60.8 showing by the squad, which is 38 points over Chris, that seems like a good pick.
Yeah, I think the what's that saying? It's like the roosters have already come home to the hatch or whatever. Or, I don't know what the saying is, but this one's in the bag.
Yes, and it's good to see that you you're really making use of that that farm cliche book you got for Christmas.
Yeah, my mom didn't know what to get me, so that's what I got.
What do you get the man who already has everything? And in the case of the Stubby Clap Clappers, who we both had to win an incredible fourth in a row over Flex, he is already up almost 70 points. Are we going to see a 4-0 Garth MacInnis team?
We both picked him, right? Yeah, we definitely we definitely are going to see a 4-0 Garth MacInnis team. 1,000%.
Okay. All right. Well, then let's go ahead and have a quick review of the last team that we were, sorry, the last matchup that we both selected. And this one has you in it. And we both selected the Raccoons for this in a weird mirror of my own matchup where we were both against me and I'm winning. We're both against you, and you are kicking all the tail you can find right now.
Yeah, my team's angry, I think, about my lack of faith in them and wanting to change the direction of my team. So they've decided to give a fuck this week, which is interesting.
Yeah, so I think we might both be getting that one wrong, as you already have 100 points on them. This is... You know.
Well, this is what happened last week, right? Like, Ian just curb stomped me. I think took my teeth, off the curb, put them in my mouth, and I'm reintroducing the raccoons to a curb. So there you go.
All right. Well, let's shift now to the matchups that we didn't have the same opinion on. And the top of that list is the ever so important 18th team versus 19th team. Nice. The man against Ash. I had taken Nick. You had taken Ash, as you are. I had been forecasting all year and fading the man. And so far, your pick of Ash looks well. Very well prognosticated.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to say that I am an Ash believer, but we know that's not the case, right? Like, I'm just fading Nick all year. So it doesn't matter who he's playing for the most part. I will be fading him. And so far, it's I think I don't know. We should take a look at this later, but I think I'm up in terms of my record with that position. So.
Yeah, you absolutely could be. And I mean, currently, the Moneyballers have a 60-point lead over the man, almost exclusively on the back of Brandon Drury, who's 26 points by himself, surpasses everything that Nick's team's been able to pull to the table so far. So your pick there is looking good. But let's go ahead and jump down to the matchup between Jamil and Ben. A little bit of a closer matchup. I'm on Jamil on this one. You've got Ben. I'm off Ben this week. He's burned me 3 weeks running now, except for a quality start in there. And so far, my pick of Jamil is looking good with a 16-point lead this Tuesday night.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame you for fading Ben if you've picked him the last couple weeks. I think I picked Ben mainly because I still believe in what he was last year, and maybe that's like stupid to do that because he's 1-2 and really isn't what he's been last year. But I think for him and his team, he is about ready to bust out. Right? Like, I don't think you're going to hold down Goldschmidt and those guys forever. And I think this is a week he pulls it out. But so far, it's not looking great.
Fair enough. And with that, sir, we come to the last matchup, arguably the matchup of the week, if we're going to be honest with ourselves, as we see the undefeated Saddle Monsters, our second place team, going up against the undefeated Big Beefy Baseball Boys with Graham. Two undefeated teams right at the top of shop. I'm on Stads on this one. You're on Graham. And right now, it's still pretty close. It's a 10-point favorite for Graham right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, full disclosure, I guess, to people, right? Like, we originally both picked Ian, right? That was what we both did.
Yep.
But I literally felt 50-50 on this either way. And I was just hoping you would pick Graham and we'd have something to talk about. So I'm happy to take Graham. So we have something to talk about. But this matchup is like the boxing match on the weekend. It's like two guys just trading haymakers. I am going to be watching this matchup all week more than I'll watch my own. I think it's going to be awesome. I think this will be the matchup of the week. I think it is a matchup of the week, and we're going to be talking about it on Slack on Sunday. I almost guarantee it.
Well, I mean, I certainly hope so. You love to see, you know, when two people that would probably be classified as underdogs coming into the year, although I did have Stads and Graham both in my playoffs, if we review that. So I'm looking particularly Nostradamic here. But you do love to see when, you know, when both teams sort of get up and have that fight, right? Even early on, right? It's going to be sad that only one of them is going to come out undefeated at the end of this, but hard to believe that the other won't be right there with them in the standings before this thing is over.
Well, I don't know Graham nearly as well as I know Ian, but like from what I understand, these are two awesome guys, like in real life as well, two genuinely nice dudes. So it just makes it even better that it's not like Ryan Neeson at the top, where like nobody wants Neeson to ever be good because they don't want to deal with it. But like these guys, they're not on Slack bragging. They're genuinely nice, great, awesome dudes. So it couldn't happen to two better people. I'm excited about this, genuinely.
Yeah, we'll have to see. But it should be a good matchup and fun to watch all week. So with that, then, we've got our picks in. Set them and lock them, and we'll see who comes out on top. It's good to have a week where we're not both just taking all chalk all the way down.
No, it's great. And I hope that, like, as the weeks continue, we can diverge a bit more. If I get a little bit more testicular fortitude, I'll try to pick less chalk.
I mean, that's... Why does it always seem to come back around to the fallacies of our pool in general, with between penis and cockney and now, you know, testicular fortitude, which is always fun to say. All right. Well, Jeremiah, is there anything else that we need to go over here? We've gone a little bit longer than I think we'd intended, but I think it's been a good show so far.
No, I'd agree with you. Nothing more to say.
Nothing more to say. Well, then, allow me to wrap us up. Thank you once again, everyone, for tuning in. I'm Garth Newton, signing off for Jeremiah Johnson. Good night and good fantasy.